2006. Before Brody. Chapter 1. Ashrafi, Beirut, Lebanon. Nightingale was late. Sitting in the darkened movie theater, second seat, fourth row from the back, Carrie Matheson tried to decide whether to abort. It was supposed to be an initial contact only. Passing ships, Saul Berenson, her boss and mentor, had called it, during training back at the farm, the CIA's training facility in Virginia. Get a close-up look at one Taha Alduni, to whom they'd assigned the codename Nightingale. Let him get a quick look at her for the next time. Whisper the time and location for the next meet and leave. Strictly by the book. If the contact was late, company protocol was to wait 15 to 20 minutes, then abort and reschedule. Only if the contact provided a damn good reason why they hadn't shown. An everyday excuse such as Middle Eastern time, which could be anything from a half hour to a half day late, or the regular Friday evening traffic mashup on Boulevard Fouad Shihab during the Sanka set, the hours between 5 and 7 p.m., when businessmen met their mistresses in discreet little Hamra district apartments, wouldn't cut it. Except Carrie wanted this one. According to her source, Dima, a pretty Lebanese party girl from March 14, a Maronite Christian political group, whom you could find every night at the rooftop bar at Le Grey in the Central District, Alduni had two things that made him someone the CIA would die to get their hands on. One, he was GSD, an officer in the General Security Directorate, the brutal Syrian secret intelligence agency, which gave him a direct pipeline into the Assad regime in Damascus. And two, he needed money. A foxy Egyptian girlfriend with expensive tastes was bleeding him dry, Dima said. She checked her watch again. 29 minutes. Where the hell was he? She looked around the theater. It was more than three quarters full. Since the movie started, no one had come in. On the screen, Harry Potter, Ron, and Hermione were in Mad-Eye Moody's class, watching him put an imperious curse on a lethal-looking flying insect. Her nerves felt taut as a violin string, though that didn't mean anything. She couldn't always trust her feelings, because there were times when she thought her nervous electrical system had been put together by the same idiots who built the Washington, D.C. power grid. Bipolar disorder, the doctors called it. A psychiatric mood disorder, characterized by episodes of hypomania, alternating with depressive episodes, as a psychiatrist once recommended by the Student Health Center back at Princeton had described it. Her sister, Maggie, had a better definition for it. Mood swings that cycle from I'm the smartest, prettiest, most fantastic girl in the universe to I want to kill myself. Even so, everything about this contact felt wrong. She couldn't wait any longer, she told herself. On the screen, Hermione was screaming at Moody, begging him to stop a curse that was torturing the poor insect to death. Perfect timing. Lots of noise and special effects. No one would notice her, she decided, getting up and making her way out to the theater lobby. She stepped outside to the street, feeling conspicuous, exposed. To a certain extent, it was always that way for a Western woman in the Middle East. You stood out. The only way to disguise yourself would be to wear a full body covering abaya and veil and hope no one got close enough to get a good look. But with her slender build, long straight blonde hair, and all-American face, Carrie couldn't fool anyone except at a distance. And in any case, that wouldn't work in North Beirut, where women wore everything from hijabs to skin-tight designer jeans, and sometimes both at the same time.